And you are listening to KTOO. A plan to bring more high-speed electric vehicle charging stations to Alaska is back on track. That's after the Trump administration last month reopened a federal program intended to expand EV infrastructure. The move also loosened some requirements for how and where the charging stations can be installed. State and municipal entities had plans to bring more charging stations to Alaska with federal funds from the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program. But progress was stalled back in February when the Trump administration put the program under review and froze funding. Curtis Thayer is the executive director of the Alaska Energy Authority, which oversees the state project to put more charging stations on the highway system. He says the new requirements are easier for Alaska to meet, and that might put the project ahead of schedule, even after the six-month holdup.
The old plan had to have a certain size of chargers, which for Alaska, they were oversized for a lot of our communities, and they cost a lot of money. And also, we had to have charging stations within 50 miles of each other.
Demand for electric vehicles is up around the state, but unlike Anchorage and Juneau, EV owners in the interior have limited options to juice up. Charging stations on the highways, those that actually work, are scarce. Now that funds are flowing again, the State Energy Authority expects about $50 million to close the gaps. It plans to put 9 charging stations on the Parks Highway, which connects Fairbanks to Anchorage. After that, Thayer says they'll look at putting stations on other highways and in some coastal communities.
Juneau, Ketchikan, Sitka, Kodiak, Yakutat, Cordova, wherever the ferries happen to go. So we have several years worth of work to do.
Federal funding for a $2.5 million project to install charging stations around Fairbanks has also thawed. An Italian man is missing after falling into a hole in the ice on the Mendenhall Glacier yesterday. Juneau search and rescue responders have called off the search. The Alaska State Troopers have not named the man and are working to connect with his family. According to troopers, the man was on the glacier Tuesday afternoon with 2 travel companions. Troopers did not say where on the glacier they were, but a dispatch says the man initially fell into a stream and was pushed by the rushing water into the hole in the ice. The people with him said they could not see him after that. Juneau Mountain Rescue attempted to locate him, but found the hole was filled with rushing water. They decided it would be too dangerous to try to locate the man. At least 3 people have died while recreating in Juneau this summer. On Saturday, an Arizona resident was reported missing, and his body was discovered on Monday near the Mendenhall Glacier. He is believed to have died from injuries suffered during a fall. And ships could pose a risk to seabirds migrating through Alaska's waters. Researchers mapped where ship traffic overlapped with bird traffic to pinpoint areas where flocks are more likely to smack into vessels, a phenomenon called bird storms. Here's more. In the early 2000s, a group of researchers got caught in a bird storm. Jeff Williams was retrieving fishing nets on a research vessel in the Aleutian Islands when suddenly hundreds of fork-tailed storm petrels descended on the scientists. Williams leads the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
It was one of these foggy nights. Birds just come flying in. It's about this time of year, fall, so the birds have just fledged, many of them. They've been raised most of the summer.
The birds seemed attracted to the ship's lights like moths to a flame. So the scientists shut them off. Then they blew hair dryers to warm up the dazed, wet, and cold storm petrels before releasing them. He says the birds fluttered down onto the boat and not many of them died. But other flocks aren't as lucky.
Some birds like eiders, something like that, larger waterfowl, they're flying really fast. If they have a collision with a boat, they're going so fast that they probably die.
Williams says these so-called bird storms happen multiple times a year in the Aleutians, especially when massive colonies gather to feed and breed. But he says there isn't much data on how many birds actually die when they interact with boats in Alaska's waters, or how often that happens. A paper published in the journal Conservation Biology last month made a first attempt at assessing the potential risk to birds by mapping where they are most likely to interact with vessels in much of Alaska's waters, including the Aleutian Islands and up in the Arctic. Williams says the findings track with what he's experienced and plenty of anecdotes he's heard.
There's no regimented ways to collect information right now. We're kind of in the early periods of just recognizing some of that, what's going on. We know it happens even on vessels that try to do the right thing. It still happens.
The researchers overlapped bird observations with boat tracking data. Kelly Capsar is a postdoctoral researcher at Michigan State University. She crunched the data and made a risk score from 0 to 100 based on the overlap.
And it says if it's 0, no seabirds there, no vessels. 100 was the maximum amount of seabirds and the maximum amount of vessels that we saw.
She found bottlenecks where that overlap was highest. Two spots jumped off the map, Unimak Pass and the Bering Strait. Auklets, Shearwaters, and Northern Fulmars were most exposed to vessel traffic in these areas. And marine traffic is increasing. As the climate warms, some productive fisheries are shifting north, and Arctic sea ice is melting, opening up the high latitudes for longer periods. Ben Sullender is the director of geospatial science at Audubon Alaska and one of the authors of the paper. He says these passageways are vital for millions of migrating seabirds, and there are measures ships could take to try to avoid them.
Make sure that that light is aimed at the deck where you need it, not up into the sky where it can draw in birds from a much further area. There's other things like changing the wavelengths of the lights so birds are more responsive to some wavelengths of light.
But he says this research is just a first stab at seeing where the overlap could become a conservation problem. It doesn't identify any actual impacts vessels have on birds. The analysis also did not include Southeast due to data gaps, but the research team is hoping to make similar maps for the region in the future. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon. In Petersburg, a change in reading curriculum 2 years ago has boosted elementary reading scores to be above state and national averages. KFSK's Taylor Heckert spoke with educators about the science-backed approach in reading.
For a long time, Petersburg's Ray C. Steadman Elementary School didn't have a lot of consistency when it came to reading programs. Heather Kahn is the school's principal.
We were using something in kindergarten that we weren't using something in with first grade, but we were using something in first grade that didn't align to kindergarten or to second grade. So it was kind of a hodgepodge, kind of pulling it all together.
Kahn says that the school needed a program they could use across grade levels, while also giving students the skills they needed from the very start.
We really didn't have a reading curriculum that address the foundational needs of those, like the fundamental skills that the kids needed.
The school needed a comprehensive curriculum, but getting a curriculum was going to cost over $100,000. So the school applied for and received a grant from the State Department of Education and Early Development to cover that cost. That was a few years ago. Since then, the Petersburg School District has been using a reading curriculum that's rooted in the science behind how people learn to read. It's a curriculum that's approved by the state as a part of the Alaska Reads Act, which tries to get all students reading at grade level by third grade. Mary Midkiff is a third grade teacher, and she's been teaching for over 20 years. She says that while students were learning how to read in Petersburg, and that teachers were working hard, the system they were using to teach wasn't always the most efficient. That meant that teachers would have to spend a lot of time catching students up later. But Midkiff says that science has come a long way in understanding exactly how people learn to read.
They've also been able to really look at the brain and what happens with reading. And I think a lot of people, even in the education field, thought or hoped that it was similar to learning to talk, that if you were just around it, you got read books, you were just exposed to it, that you would naturally learn to read the same way we learn to talk. And they have found out that's not true.
This reading program has two parts to it. One is called skills. That's where students learn letters and sounds and how to break up words into parts they can understand. The second part of the curriculum is knowledge.
And the knowledge piece is that assumption or the fact that in order to read, you kind of have to have some background knowledge. You know, if I go and pick up one of my husband's electrical manuals, I can decode the words, but I have no idea. And I can't remember it, and I can't use the information because it means nothing to me.
For example, Midkiff teaches units in her classroom about the human body or on light and sound. Students are learning how to read while also learning what different words actually mean. Erin Hofaker is a second grade teacher entering her third year teaching. She was also on the team that helped pick the new curriculum. She didn't have this curriculum during her first year, and she says it's made a big difference for everyone in the classroom.
For me, it's changed just being able to be so much more involved with my students. And so they are, I mean, when the teacher's excited about it, they are obviously so much more excited and into it. So we're seeing, like, they're excited about the learning. And then also we're seeing, like, amazing growth in their data.
And the numbers are looking promising so far. By the first year alone, Petersburg's kindergartners and first graders were more than 30% above state and national averages. But the new curriculum is just part of the equation for the district's success. On top of their full-time jobs, some teachers took a 12-credit course on learning how kids read. The school also has a reading intervention program that helps get students back to speed if they're falling behind. Hofaker says it really was a community effort.
The community that we live in is really special because everybody's involved. Parents are involved. All of the schools are wanting this to be successful, and that makes a huge difference.
Stedman Elementary School is entering its third year using the curriculum, and the district is also expanding it to the middle school level this year. In Petersburg, I'm Taylor Heckert.
A nonprofit coordinating academic research on the Arctic says it's shutting down as its federal funding dries up. The Arctic Research Consortium of the United States says its plans to wind down operations at the end of this month. The group says the National Science Foundation's decision to scrap plans for a grant that provides the bulk of its funding left it no choice but to close its doors. The National Science Foundation did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The Arctic Research Consortium brings together scientists working with universities, government agencies, and nonprofits to collaborate and share their findings. And researcher Michael Walsh says the shutdown comes at a critical time. That's as the federal government is actively seeking input on a new five-year plan for government-funded Arctic research.
That new national plan for Arctic research is going to have to answer some of these big questions. You know, what are the policy drivers? What are the priority areas? What should, you know, the U.S. government focus on supporting in the context of Arctic research?
Walsh says there's no clear substitute for the organization once it shuts down at the end of the month. You are listening to KTOO News. The weather right now is 71 degrees and it is sunny. You're listening to KTOO. This is Alex Solomon.